You know, sometimes someone will come up with a word or an expression that is just so clear that even though you've never heard it before, you know exactly what it means. I had an experience like that earlier today when I saw somebody reacting to a tweet from famous celebrity idiot Chelsea Handler, who, when she's not telling black men how to be black, had this to say about the ongoing trial up in Minneapolis. She tweeted, "So pathetic that there's a trial to prove that Derek Chauvin killed George Floyd when there is video evidence of him doing so." To which a really terrific guy named Dan, purveyor of balderdash and chicanery, said, "Today in the reprimitivization of the species, vapid celebrity condemns the concept of a jury trial." Exactly. Chelsea Handler doesn't need to be at the trial. She doesn't need to know what's going on at the trial. She's already reached her conclusion. And the reprimitivization of America continues. Because that's really it, isn't it? We're not talking about slowing down an actual progress towards justice or equality. We're not even talking about stopping. We're talking about now is somebody in the car driving in reverse with their one arm over the seat and the other hand on the steering wheel doing 65 miles an hour backwards as fast as they can. The reprimitivization of America. And that's a perfect term. Reprimitivization. Well, what are some qualities of primitive societies? Obviously, there's technological differences, but the main difference, really, when you get right down to it, is how big is the tribe? In very primitive civilizations, the tribe consists of family members. If you have a slightly more advanced civilization, the tribe may consist of family members and relatives of the dominant person in that family. And then as you get more and more advanced, you might consider a guild or a relationship like the Habsburgs or something like that. When you get to the idea of a nation state, then the tribe becomes the whole country. And this is what civilization is. It's an expanding of the tribe to include everybody in the nation. And that entire idea of all of us being part of a country, all of us being part of America, equally part of America, is directly under attack. And in order for it to be under attack, it has to be destroyed. Civilization has to be destroyed. Now, the way you do that, of course, is to take what was E Pluribus Unum, one entire country of 330 million people, and chop them up into the little tribes, and I've covered this many times before. But I thought we might take a quick look at how this is done by taking a look at just a couple of stories that have happened in the last week or two and see how the media goes about doing what the media goes about doing. Now, there was a shootout in Boulder, Colorado, a short time ago, and when the first picture of the person being arrested was publicized, "Oh, look, a white man with a gun," said all the progressives everywhere. "Look at that, a white man with a gun, as usual. If it had been a black guy, he would have been killed, but this guy's obviously taken alive, so there's more racism for you to chew on and more reason to divide the country into tribes. A white man with a gun." Well, the white man with the gun who shot up the supermarket in Boulder, Colorado, is named Ahmed Al-Issa. And once it became clear that the Boulder shooter was not a white man with a gun, but a Muslim man with the gun, well, that's when the story stopped being a story, didn't it? Now, the reason that happened, of course, is because white people with guns are the primary target today. And Muslims are a protected class of citizen. If you're a Muslim, you're oppressed in this country, obviously, and so therefore you are protected by the news media, who is constructing the narrative of how to divide the country into tribes. By the way, during that shooting, a police officer was killed trying to stop him. Do the police get credit for that? The fact that a man whose job is to go in and run towards gunshots was shot dead by this lunatic? Any credit for the police for that? No. The police. It doesn't matter. That's not relevant to the discussion. Now, we get to the interesting part, because within a few days, a person was murdered by cold-blooded teenagers in New York in a carjacking, and even better for the narrative, that was a Muslim, a man named Muhammad Anwar. Well, now you're set up. Muhammad Anwar, a Muslim, peaceful Muslim, attacked and killed in a carjacking by more of these dangerous white males. The story writes itself. Only we discover that the carjackers weren't white kids or white males or Trump supporters. They were blacks, young blacks. And so that no longer became a story either. And that one must have really hurt too, just like the one with the Boulder shooter. Here you are, all set to go. White man with a gun, fantastic. Oh, he's a Muslim, can't really touch that. Oh, look, a Muslim has been killed by a couple of black teens. We can't really touch that either. And just as a quick aside, there are horrific videos shot in real time there of both of these crimes. I'm not going to show either one of them. The one of the carjacking is chilling and, what do you say, alarming, disgusting. One of the two teenagers that just murdered this man driving the car is concerned that she left her phone in the car. That's the limit of her concern. That's it. The video from Boulder is different. It's not so abhorrent, but it does have a couple of elements in it I found a little bit disturbing. It's essentially a guy doing a real-time narrative of what he's actually seeing. And he goes to a door and he holds his camera up, and right there in front of him, 10 feet away, if that, is a person who's been shot lying crumpled on a ramp. Out in the parking lot, 50, 60 feet away, is another person lying down, just probably killed on the ramp. And he goes into the store, and when he gets inside the store, we see a person right there, just by the cash registers, just a few feet away. And the thing that bothered me about this was what he was saying. This is basically pretty much a direct quote from him. Something just happened here, guys. Look, there's people lying in the street, guys. Guys, we've got people down inside King Super's bang, 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 and then I'm getting away, guys. And it's not the profanity that bothered me. God knows what I would be saying in a situation like that. But what bothered me was the guys. He was streaming this thing live. He was providing a live narration. And the one thing he wasn't doing was helping the people who were down there on the ground. You can look across the parking lot and see a woman who has already bending down to assist the person who's lying a little further away there. And the guy with the camera says, there's a shooter. There's an active shooter. Get away. Maybe not bad advice, but I was struck by the fact that here at least is one person who's out of their car trying to see if they can do something about this injured person, see if they can offer assistance, maybe stop the bleeding. She wasn't doing live commentary of the whole thing, and that caught my attention. So, I think there are two lessons that we can learn from these stories back to back, and the first one, of course, involves the news media. Watching them bubbling with glee in the early moments of both of these stories, and then basically pulling them back because they realized that the people doing the attacking were protected class. You look at this, people like you and me look at this, and we say, is the news media ever going to do their job? Are they ever going to do their job? Ever, ever, ever going to do their job? And the first lesson I think that we need to take away from this is, oh, they are doing their job. They're doing their job full time. We think that the job of the news media is to report the news. But that hasn't been true for a long, long time. The job of the news media is to select which stories in the news advance the narrative and construct stories in such a way so that the narrative is kicked down the road a little bit further. We're already starting to see the narrative changing towards anti-Asian hate crimes because Asians are doing well in America and we've got to find a way to make them angry too. So we're going to start looking at those stories and trumpeting those and not put any context around them either. So the media is doing their job. Their job is to create a narrative. They are a propaganda service. And what they're doing is effective. They're doing their job very, very well. The second lesson, I think, is much more important than the first one regarding these two stories. As this race to reprimitivize the culture accelerates, we have to remember the lesson of these stories. And that lesson is, it's not what these people are that matters. It's who these people are. It's not a question of Muslims being murderers or victims. It's a question of this individual shot up 10 people. This other individual was just doing his job like any one of us and was the victim of a murderous assault. Those are individual people. And because they're individual people, we can include them in the largest tribe of all, which is the human race. We can look at what happened as a result of individual actions of individual humans, not as this group is dangerous, this group is violent, this group is protected, this group is our target. We have to resist with all of our might, the reprimitivization of this society. And the way we do that is to look at the stories we're being told that are based upon skin color and refusing to swallow the bait. We're just not going to accept it. Was this a good man? Was this a bad man? That's all you need to know.